Welcome to Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio, powered by The Barbershop. In this podcast, we'll bring you the latest insights and trends from industry leaders in advertising and marketing. Join us as we dive into discussions that shape the future of our industry.
Hello, everyone. So just before, I've got a bit of housekeeping to do. So I think people have been using Slido. Is that something? Okay, great. So you can ask questions with Slido during this panel. So you open up your app, you go to Q&As, you ask some questions. It appears on the screen, and we've got like 5 minutes at the end to be able to answer those questions. Please do it, otherwise that'll be a blank screen, and I'll feel very uncomfortable. So this panel is about creator and brand partnerships, the power of authentic collaboration. So I'm an Associate Director of Creative Strategy at Whaler. We are a creator economy agency. And basically my job is to like bridge creators, these wonderful people on stage, with brands, the wonderful people out there. So, and it is also about finding the most impactful, innovative ways of doing that. So we're going to be talking about that today. But I think the conversation, and when I speak to these guys, conversation around authenticity in content and creative is kind of done, right? Like you can find that content if you want to. So we're going to talk about the actual granularity, the nuances of what that means, and also how we can all be better to make sure these guys make the best content for your brands. So I'm just going to do some introductions. Firstly, we've got Zara McDermott in the middle here. Zara is a documentarian, TV star, entrepreneur, and content creator. Her content spans from cerebral comedy skits on Instagram to poignant and deeply important cultural conversations. She has the combination of a star factor with a deep resonating interest in the conversations we all want answers to. So if you all give it up to Zara.
Yes.
At the end here we have Callum, a subversive storyteller and presenter. Callum has attempted many challenges, like flying to Dubai for cheaper than a tank of fuel, and my personal favourite, how many pegs can he put on his dad without him noticing? It was nine, right?
It was nine. So
his storytelling formats has won him millions of adoring fans across multiple platforms. Give it up to Callum. And we have Misha here, an online coach and chronic illness sufferer, educator and inspirer. His content, deeply personal to me with colitis, has been consequential to helping thousands of people with chronic illnesses. And his content is absolute testament for me to how the creator economy is finding these amazing voices and blossoming them about important subjects. So thank you for being here, Misha. So just to kick off with, accumulatively, you have 9 million followers between all of you, which is nearly the same population of Sweden, which ChatGPT told me. So that's handy. That's obviously incredible. But as an intro to you guys, rather than talking about your history and things like that, why do you think you have so many followers? And what is it about what you do and what you say that means that people go onto your profile and click the follow button? I'm going to start with you, Zara, even though there was a kind of deep breath there that I noticed.
Do you know what? I try sometimes not to think about the number because it is quite a big scary number, actually. And I don't really know the answer to why, but I think that I try to use my platform and I try not to pigeonhole myself too much into one area. I think you can be funny, you can be serious, you can be glamorous, you can be unglamorous, and you can be honest all at the same time. And I don't think there's any reason why you can't be all of those things. And I just thought, I'm just going to post a funny TikTok every now and again. I'm also going to post a photo of me at Cannes Film Festival with a massive ball gown on. And then the next day, I'm going to post a picture of, I don't know, a revenge porn law that is being changed. Like, I don't see why you can't be all of those things. So that's what I try and keep up with my social media.
Amazing. Misha, we'll come to you next.
I'd say for me, it's probably value. So when someone comes onto my channel, the idea and the philosophy behind it is they can watch one of my videos and it can have a profound impact on themselves or like a member of their family. So I think the key for me is basically giving value of every piece of content I put out, as opposed to it just being like surface level.
Nice, man. And what about you, Kev? I would sort of class my content as a whole as the entertainment sort of category bracket type thing. My rule of thumb when posting content is I will never post a video that I wouldn't want to watch myself. So that's sort of the angle that I'm going in at. So if it's something that I enjoy making, I enjoy watching, then I'd hope that other people would enjoy that too. My content as a whole is very, very sort of niche, very unique to myself, but to an audience it's quite valuable in terms of when you're scrolling, you might want to stop and see what's going on. As you say, multiple crazy challenges all over the world. And yeah, just having a laugh with it really, keeping it lighthearted, and spreading like positive energy, basically.
Nice, man. Yeah, totally. I see that in all of your contents, and the reason why I follow all of you. I think that's what's interesting to me is that you have this type of storytelling, each of you, quite distinctively and authentically. And when brand partnerships get involved, how do you adapt that content to kind of cater to that? Because obviously you all started somewhere posting up these, you know, funny skits or storytelling methods or something about, you know, Crohn's colitis. How do you kind of adapt that content when brands get involved currently?
I'll ask you, Mitch.
So I guess my content initially started as very much like raising awareness and empowering people. And then I come to realize as that sort of, it changed after lockdown. Mm. And I wanted to like show a little bit more of me. And that was really important. I was like, what am I really interested in? If I'm going to be creating content, like I've got to enjoy doing it fundamentally. So now I've kind of like reached my scales of what I create very differently, right? So I do food-based content around what I can and can't eat, and that navigates the brand in that phase. I was a rehab coach for 10 years, so I worked with like cancer patients and people that had like triple heart bypasses. So I make a lot of like fitness content. I follow like my run journeys and stuff, and I've kind of built up different sort of what would you call them, like catalogs of what I enjoy doing. Yeah. And then naturally by me just doing that authentically, brands can almost place themselves with any of those parts.
Nice, that's cool. What about you, Zara?
I mean, I think I can answer this broadly. My ethos with content is creating content with a brand because I want to, not because I need to. And I think that, you know, for me, I started off, you know, I came out of Love Island and it was little brand partnership here, single one-off deal, one-off post. And, you know, as I've kind of grown as a person and realized that where my values are, and, you know, I'm a documentary maker as well, and that takes up a huge amount of my time, I'm like, if I'm working with a brand, they need to align with my core values. They need to understand the work that I do, appreciate it and support it. So, you know, now I've like kind of, I say to myself that only working with like 4-5 brands maybe through the whole year, but for me that works because those partnerships become really, really authentic. And those partnerships have come about because I've approached the brands. Usually, you know, me and my manager Ed's here, like we approach the brands with ideas, and we go to them thinking, you know, how can we work with you well, because I love your products and I use them in my everyday life. So that's how I suppose my relationship with brand partnerships has changed over the years.
Super interesting. Okay, cool. And what about you, Cohen?
Yeah, following on from what Zara said there, obviously the brand has to resonate with both myself and the audience in order for the content to be authentic for a start, but also in terms of the briefing sort of process to the execution with the content itself, I like to be involved from the get-go. So as soon as the conversation's happening, I love talking with the brand, working on stuff together, and the dreaded creative freedom coming into play. I know it's not music to everyone's ears brand-wise, but for an agency and creators like ourselves, it's really important that we can sort of obviously hit every single bullet point on the brief, but at the same time, do it in a way that suits us and our audience. I'll always say to a brand, if they're going to give me a script, there's no point working with myself because that's not me. That's not how I play it. Obviously, if I'm writing the script, it's slightly different because that is me. But yeah, in terms of working with a brand authentically, it's mainly down to working together on the project. Mm. The brand's doing as much for us as we are the brand, and it's a collaborative project itself. So if that can shine through in the content, then it's a win.
Great, man. I mean, I'm going off questions here. It's rogue now, so I'm slightly more of a snap. It's interesting what you said about that, and when we were talking about it earlier, before. Like, this idea of creative freedom. And so when you, do you feel like you have to ever sacrifice your authenticity and the authentic content in exchange for when a brand comes to you, just to, like, I know what it's like to get to the latter stages of a creative and you're like, I just want to get it done. Like, I just need to get this content out. So like,
do you feel like that's common, or have you come across that, and have you been able to overcome that? And
I feel very strongly about this, because me and my boyfriend Sam, I mean, I would say my boyfriend is one of the best creators like in the UK. He is incredible at creating brand advertisements. He's amazing. And we look at briefs sometimes and it'll be two pages of bullet points, and then at the end it will say, we would love the content to feel authentic, so maybe just put this a bit in your own words. You're like, I don't know how I'm going to get all of this in, first of all, a very short amount of time, because I've only got like a minute per story, or 1 minute and 30 seconds for a reel. But also, you know, like, I want to be able to feel that I can be creative, but the more prescriptive brands are, the more you feel a little bit trapped. Then also you're in a bit of a catch 22, because you also don't want to push back. We were having this conversation, weren't we? Like, it's hard to push back because, you know, you also don't want to be difficult. But the only reason that people like us push back is because we want the content to perform. We want it to do well. We want it to feel authentic. So I think that there is a nice medium that needs to be met.
Yeah.
Yeah, as I think that's really important. It's the fact that we want it to perform well as much as the brand does. Obviously, I don't want to post a video on my page that's going to flop. I want my audience to enjoy that content, whether it's branded or not. So I sort of see every single piece, like I said earlier, as a project in itself, and as something that I want to push out to my audience. So again, seconding on from what Zara said there, it's really important that, I guess, brands, agencies, whoever it is that we're working with, understand that we actually really want that video to do well as well. I feel like a lot of people think that we're just trying to be cheeky about it. We're just trying to do the bare minimum, if that makes sense. But as we're saying, if we push back, it's because we might maybe know a little bit better than the brand themselves on what works on our page.
Mm-hmm. I think you can add into that about like longer term partnerships as well, and like returning back to creators. Just in like, for me personally, I'll only work with brands if there's some sort of longevity to it, because I've built my millions of followers myself over the years. I didn't want to destroy that in one brand deal. So like that returning and that trust, because I probably understand that like quite a lot of you guys right out there right now have probably worked with creators and the creator hasn't done a good job. So naturally you're instinctively going to be like on the defense of how much you need to take control of that project. But why go to a professional when you want to take full control? It's like, we love what you do, but you're not going to do any of that.
Yeah.
It doesn't really make any sense. And then it doesn't work with our followers then as well.
Yeah. I think that is the most common thing I come across. Like when I speak to creators, and also when I speak to brands, the biggest thing is we want authentic content. And it's like, that's cool, man. But there's a lot of like, don't send a 2-page brief to like a creator. It's like, so true. Anyways, I'll get back to script. this is kind of to continue from that. So if a perfect brief came through the door, what would that look like?
For me, the perfect brief is one a brand I would like to work with. It's typical morals, typical ethics type thing. I'm not going to sit here and say we don't want to hit the brand KPIs. We don't want to hit the brand points. 100%, if there's bullet points on a brief, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to say every single one in my own way. So definitely have sort of the objectives that you want to hit. But also, like Zara was saying there, keeping it quite short, to the point where when we're shooting on the day, it's not a case of a 15-page slideshow to find out the key ingredients of what you need in that video. It's more a sense of, this is what we need you to say, how are you going to do it? And as I say, getting brought in early to the briefing stage means that that's sort of bulletproof already. The brand knows what to expect, we know what to expect, and when we're out shooting, doing the stuff that we need to do, it's there ready to go, and we know that there's not going to be major changes where we've got to go do it all again. It's more a case of, oh, can we change that shot? We don't like the branding. Or can we change that shot? Can we change the voiceover? It's not to the extent of, can you fly to Dubai again and do it for us? Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. You touched on a really interesting point there. I'll come back to you guys as well on this. But I think when we were talking about this, I found your answer super interesting. But the biggest thing that I tried to do in my role is quite simple, not to underplay my job and sort of, you know, get it ruined. But I tried to find what the brand DNA is from the brand, and then I try to find creators who match that brand DNA. Because I think this whole question of like authenticity, you're like, well, just find people who love your brand and are kind of like your brand, and as you were saying about content funnels and things like that, like already do that stuff. But what are the three things like brand DNA indicators that you guys look for? What's like, this kind of ties into the perfect pitch question, but what are those things that you guys, I'll start with Zara and then I'll come back to you.
Sweet.
I mean, that's really hard to answer, because there's so many things that I want to see when I look at a brief and look at kind of brand DNA. But for me, this is a really personal one, but for me, I look for a brand that's about female empowerment, because that really ties in with a lot of the work that I do in the documentary space. So for example, I work with L'Oreal on an annual contract, and I absolutely love them because of the work they do around female empowerment. They did a recent campaign about street assault, sexual assault on the streets, and I'm like, thank you. I love that a brand is like actually putting that ethos before selling a product. There was no product at this event, it was just about that, and I'm like, I love that. So that's one of the main things I really look for. But that, you know, it's really personal, I think, depending on creator, like what you're looking for. My boyfriend Sam will look for a brand that understands his sense of humor and will allow him to kind of put some little funny innuendos and kind of push the boundaries a little bit with humor, and a brand that isn't afraid to kind of not be in the complete safe zone and just have a little bit of a laugh and have a bit of fun, you know, and that is really important to him. So I think it is really individual.
Yeah, absolutely. What about you, Nisha? What's your kind of like the DNA you look for?
I think that's so important. What do they represent? That is like a massive one, because again, if you do a brand deal, you know, like just to cash in off that, for one, your followers will see that because it's not aligned with what you usually say or your belief system. I think just the core values of the company is so important. I think that's probably the main one, because that's what you're looking at as surface level. Do I like it? Do I actually use it? And is it going to look like an ad for me? You know, because that's what we're trying to create, right? Is something that's completely authentic and sort of does go with your content or go with your message. So I'm very selective with who I work with. Like, I'm happy to say no if it doesn't quite work.
Yeah.
But that's something that comes with experience, I think. At the beginning of any job, you're like, oh my God, this is my job now, I need to take work. And as you sort of set into it more, you realize, me personally, I'm in it for the long game. Yeah. I started this from nothing. I've been doing it for over 10 years. I'm still here now, so I'm obviously doing something right.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. Okay, great. We've got a little bit of a road question, which is all about an elevator pitch to the audience. So the biggest thing that... sorry, the claps was... I thought I was getting the applause.
This is so brilliant. It was a round of applause.
I know, it is a good question, isn't it? What I find super interesting is that I always thought... So speaking to creators quite a lot, there's always that question and always this part of whether I'm having a coffee with them or a drink with them or whatever it might be. I'm always like, what's the piece of content that you've always wanted to make, but the brands have never been brave to do? And or has that already happened? Like, have you already had that opportunity, you know, with that kind of stuff? So I kind of like this as like a 1 minute pitch to the room to be like, right, let's put some crazy thoughts out there. And there might be someone who's like, that sounds great, I'll just do that. So I'm going to start with Nisha.
Oh, no.
then I'm going to move to Zara, and then I'm going to move to Cal. You don't have to stick to the 1 minute.
Yeah.
To be fair.
But. I guess like we were more discussing like almost like a business model, right? So when we said this question, I was kind of like, how could the relationship between creators and businesses function more freely? And I think it would just be like almost having like an agency sitting in between that, a representative of the person that you're trying to work with. So like for me, as like someone living with an invisible disability, like when you're coming up with one of these campaigns or a campaign idea, are the right voices within the room to actually make an informed decision, as opposed to just guesswork, right? Because that's where the danger is. If you assume, you could get it completely wrong and really offend a huge community. So kind of like where I would love to push, and some of the areas I'd love to breach for me personally with a stoma, is seeing more people with disabilities within the fashion industry. So like, why can't you scroll down an ASOS to get an order and see someone like myself in a pair of boxers with their stoma out? Well, that should be normal. It shouldn't be something that's like shocking. So like, that's kind of where my mind's at in terms of having more representation, and not just for the token tick box of having someone there with a disability.
Great, man. Love it. Yeah, so true. What about you, Zara?
I suppose mine comes from a slightly different angle. And this is something that I actually got off the ground. So about a year ago, I said to my manager, there's a product that my mum uses, I use, and my nan uses. I want to do something with this. I want to, and it was actually L'Oreal True Match Foundation. I was like, I want to do something that actually encapsulates the fact that this is a product that I use in my everyday life. I have done for years, and so have my family. How can we push this message out there that this is great for every skin type, you know, old and young? So I pitched this kind of idea into L'Oreal with my manager, and they came back and they were like, we love it. And literally a few weeks ago, there were me and my mum on the back of the tube. It was incredible. Like, me and my mum were just like blown away by the fact that this had actually come to fruition. But that came from an idea of pure authenticity, of like genuinely loving and buying the product and going to our local Boots and grabbing the foundation every time we went out. Like, that is where it came from. So I think having that relationship with a brand where you can pitch in ideas, I think, is becoming more and more important, because that is the definition of authentic, when it actually comes from the creator. So, and I find that more and more brands are asking for that now. Like, we want you to come to us with an idea. And I love it.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's such a good idea as well, by the way. Cal, what
have you? Right, I've got a minute and I can chat a lot.
I'll cut you and off the rail.
I know, I'm thinking, right, okay, let's go. 3, 2, 1.
54. No. 53.
There's two ideas in particular. This is literally just straight ideas, because I haven't got a lot of time. One idea that I proposed and pitched to a brand, which didn't get through legal team, which is a shame. This is an idea I've really wanted to do. So is there anyone out there with a tenner, bright at me, we can make it happen. I wanted to wrap a bus in London, send it around all the different crazy sort of viewpoints. Big Ben, London Eye, London Bridge, let's do it, let's go crazy.
Big Ben.
Yeah. And I was going to basically be on the bus without giving too much away about the brand, have people running behind the bus. Anyway, it's going to be this massive sort of event where I wrap this bus. And it was going to come out of my budget for the video, so I would have actually made a loss on the video itself, but I was happy to do it for the content. That's one idea I would love to do with a brand.
And just to say, that was a TV show
this is
that you were
going to
advertise, right? Which I find super fascinating, because you're mixing old media with new media.
That's it. Yeah.
Genius.
Yeah, so I was going to be dressed up as, let's call it a character from one of these shows. And it was going to be a massive do. But anyway, that didn't get signed off. That's one idea. Also, another idea as part of an ongoing series that I'm doing at the moment, which, touch wood, has got 100% success rate of hitting press, which I know the brands in the room love a bit of old school press. As we were saying earlier, a typical sort of series challenge that I do at the moment on my account is flying to X country for cheaper than the price of this. Example being, last week I was in Portugal. I flew all the way to Portugal and bought peri peri chicken for cheaper than the price of a Nando's. Yeah, it's cool, right?
Yeah.
I've done a few of these. I tried to work with Domino's on the first one because I knew it was going to go really well. So I got my flight for £8 to Milan, landed in Milan, went to a local pizzeria, bought a pizza for a tenner. All in all, was £18. Domino's off the back of it obviously got an awful lot of press. I think the video hit about 4 million views, which is quite nice as well. And they actually released a discount code straight after to sort of take with the backlash of it all. But yeah, there's another series there that I can definitely be open to working with a brand on. For some reason, no one's bitten at it yet.
Today could be the day, mate.
Today, yeah.
Today.
Is anyone out there?
I will cut you off there.
Sorry, that was
like, you're going into pitch mode. I'm about to stand up all down the screen. Presentation
afterwards, guys. He's around for us.
Later around. So I'm going to go to some Q&As. So I like this one because I hear this probably every single day, and it's become such a trope, but it's also so important. How do you define scroll-stopping content in this day and age? Zara, I'll come to you.
I'm going to go with that one. I think starting with the punchline, usually getting straight into the content. Me and my partner do this a lot with, especially our kind of like funny advertising content, is like start with a bit of a shock, start with a punchline, start with a question, start with something interesting in terms of the shot. And I think sometimes brands can be a bit prescriptive. You know, we want to see the brand within the first 3 seconds and you're going, oh my God, but someone's going to turn off. You need them to engage in the narrative before we start introducing the brand messaging. And so that's what something that I would say is like, hit them. You need to hit them with something that's going to make them go, oh, okay. And unfortunately, sometimes a brand packaging is not going to do that.
Yeah, that's a really good tip. The amount of times I've seen Pete Wicks looking scared or something like that, yeah, the first couple of seconds, and then it cuts in. It works a treat every time. What about you guys?
I'd say that's the core. I think she's nailed it there.
Nice.
That is it. You literally just need to not just show stuff immediately. It can just be more often. People just know it's an ad straight away then, you know?
Yeah, great. I think that's really, really helpful. Thank you so much. That's really good. I think a couple more questions. That one is like, sorry, I should have done this a bit more professionally, but there's one that's so jarring, the bottom one, where I'm like, I don't know, actually. How do you feel about Cannes Lion creating a new experience for creators? I think they're doing, yeah. Who asked that? That's a good question. What about you, Cal?
I'll be
you're
there.
Going to Cannes,
I'll
right?
be there with Whaler, actually, which is exciting. Really excited for that one. Cool, go Whaler. Yeah, no, this will be my first year, but I think it's a really important space for creators to be involved with. I was only saying earlier, even here today, I've only bumped into you two as other creators in this room. Sorry if there's anyone else out there, but in theory, the marketing industry as a whole is very social media led at the moment. Like, this day and age is very much social first. And I think there needs to be a lot more involvement with creators, because obviously we're all using them day in, day out in brand strategy, all that kind of stuff. But there isn't a lot of representation. And I think a panel like this is really important. And the room shows that. So I think it'd be really good to get the guys at the Lions Festival.
Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%.
Cool. And this one's from me. I'm intrigued, basically. And it's a great opportunity to ask it, isn't it? So I'm always intrigued by, like, know how things adapt so quickly in terms of platforms and, like, the way that you cut media and things like that. How do you keep up to date with that, and where do you see the future of the creator economy? Like, what is it in the future that you kind of hope we start moving into as, like, a creator economy? So I'll start with you. I'll move to Misha. Cal.
I think rather than looking at a creator for the numerical value of them, looking at them for who they are, especially, like, you know, micro influencers as well, I think that we're moving to a space where we can work with more people across the board, as opposed to kind of just fixating on a few. And there's another question on there that kind of, I suppose, alludes to that. But yeah, I think that it's interesting, because I think that it's really easy to kind of be blown away by the numbers and the figures and the oh, that person's got 1 million, 2 million, 3 million followers. But actually, how much is that audience engaging, and how much is that creator actually posting ads? Are they posting 5, 6, 7 ads a week? In which case, like, you know, does that really work for your campaign? And I think being able to differentiate between those, and also putting more emphasis into, if you've got an influencer budget, rather than thinking, okay, we've got this much for influencer marketing, let's work with 10 people. Actually working with 2 people over a longer period of time, and people that fit more with the brand ethos.
Yeah.
I think that's really important.
Great. You've both got a minute each.
Yeah.
Not to rush you.
So I'd say, you know, firstly, I'm very much across all channels. So if a new platform comes out, I'm there. Just because you don't know where that will go, right? Like, a certain point, like the whole TikTok saga, I watched a video from Gary Vee, 4.2 million subs later. Yeah, just because I watched that one video. So I'm very attuned with what channels provide different messages. Facebook, for instance, is a very different audience to YouTube. YouTube's different to TikTok. So you kind of need to make sure, as a brand as well, you're understanding what you're wanting from the talent that you use on the platform that you're asking them to deliver on. Because they are very different. Like, something could do incredibly well on one channel and absolutely tank on the other. So I think it's just sort of understanding that framework of what you're wanting out of that person. And back to what we said at the beginning, making sure that it actually means something.
Yeah.
Like, it's actually got power behind what they're creating.
Great answer, man. Cal, you've got 1 minute.
Actual
not the 20.
Actual I think to answer the question about the sort of the future of the creator economy, I'm seeing a lot more with the content that I'm doing myself and sort of my peers, if you call it that. Brands are investing a lot more in creators nowadays, more so than influencers. I think there's a very different sort of space between someone like Kim Kardashian, who can literally post a photo and sell out a product, or used to be able to sell out a product, compared to someone like ourselves that actually creates content around the product or service or whatever it is that's being offered. So I'm finding brands are spending a lot more time and energy into the actual creation of the video and what quality that adds and what benefits that brings, more so than just a face. So like Zara was saying, the micro influencers are just as important as the big guys.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, guys, that wraps it up. Thank you so much for coming and asking questions. Thank you. Thank our wonderful panel.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio. Stay connected with us on social media using the handle @AdvertisingWeek, and visit our website europe.advertisingweek.com for more exclusive content. This podcast was produced by Podcander, the audio conference solution.